Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to spend the program today talking with you about birds and about a new bird book out. The author, photographer, everything about this book is Richard Crossley, internationally acclaimed birder and photographer, been birding since I think he was 7 years old, and he has put together a fantastic book. It's called The Crossley ID Guide for Eastern Birds, and that, of course, includes Wisconsin birds. So we'll be talking with him in just a minute. You know, as a regular listener to this program, you know you're always going to hear something worthwhile. And today we're asking you to put a value on this program. Your gift to WPR is vital. It's a big part of what keeps us going. I hope you'll support this program and everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio by making a gift, and it could be any amount, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And our producer, Judith Sears-Poisson, joins us. Judith, hi.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be here.
And we have a goal.
We do. Our goal is to get 60 pledges before the program ends at 12:30. Last hour, the goal was 25 pledges, and we heard from, are you ready for this, Larry, 83 listeners.
Ooh.
So thank you so much for those pledges. We hope you'll help us meet this important goal by making a contribution now at WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552. Your gift ensures that the programs you enjoy will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can contribute at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And in just a moment, we'll be talking about birding with Richard Crossley, the author of the Crossley ID Guide for Eastern Birds. And discussions like this on the Ideas Network are really possible because of your financial support. So I hope you will give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We know you give to WPR to support the programs, but as an added incentive for your good deed today, we have something special.
Indeed, we do. You can receive a copy of the Crossley ID Guide, Eastern Birds, by Richard Crossley, when you donate $200 or more. This is a wonderful book, and I hope you'll give now any amount, really, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and ask for this book as your thank you gift when you give at least $200.
Larry, we get such good guests on WPR because they know you'll ask great questions and they won't be interrupted by commercials either. Listeners, your support makes this possible. You are the most reliable part of our budget. Thanks in advance for making your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you go to give your pledge, you know you will know that giving takes just 3 minutes of your time. You just need to tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, how you'd like to pay. And using your credit card saves some time. It saves postage and paper and puts your money to work right away. Also, though, you could consider an EFT or electronic funds transfer from your bank account. That saves even more time, more postage and paper as well. So really, no matter how you choose to give, I hope you'll take those 3 minutes right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
For your pledge of $120 or more, you'll receive the WPR member card. It's a card that gives you 2-for-1 discounts at 243 participating restaurants, 46 bed and breakfasts, 53 cultural attractions, and 22 golf courses around Wisconsin.
Wow. The member benefit card it's a year-long reminder of how grateful we are for your support today. We couldn't produce great radio without your donation, so we're really happy to send you the member card as our way of saying thank you.
Give now $120 or more, and you'll receive the member card. Pledge at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
And our goal, 60 calls during this program, 60 contributions. Please do give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And don't forget to ask for a copy of the Crossley ID Guide of Eastern Birds with your pledge of $200. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Judith, you'll come back and be with us again, I
Absolutely.
Hope.
Absolutely.
All right. She'll be back a little later on. But right now, we are going to turn our attention to Richard Crossley. internationally acclaimed birder and photographer who has been birding forever, since he was 7 years old. By the time he was 21, he had hitchhiked more than 100,000 miles chasing birds around his native Britain and Europe. And I'm really pleased to have him today. I have the book in front of me. I've had a chance, and Judith has had a chance, too, to look through it very carefully. It is a wonderful book, birding book, and quite different from most of the birding books you're going to see out there. So we'll talk with him about that, and certainly take your questions and comments about the book. So I hope you'll join in. If you have some questions about the book, or maybe have some questions about birds, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org. Richard Crossley with us by phone. Richard, hi. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it.
Well, it's an honor. Thank you for inviting me, Larry. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you here. You know, you credit growing up in the British birding culture as turning you into a birder and the birder you are today. How's that culture? How would you describe that culture? Is it different from the culture here for birders?
Very much so, yeah. It's in Britain, it's a young man's sport, probably much like hunting is in the U.S. And so it's crazy. Young guys are charging all over the country, actually all over the world. It's very, very competitive. And so, you know, somebody like myself, as you mentioned, I started when I was really seven. You know, I wanted to be one of the boys, so to speak. And so I did what they did. And as a rule, you tend to get a lot better because you're a lot more focused. So it's not a relaxing hobby as such. It's a real gung-ho sport.
Yeah, but what's your life list? Do you know? Do you keep track?
No, I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. not that many, probably 2,000 or 3,000.
Well, that's a few. That's a few anyway. Well, and there are a lot of birds out there. Why did, and a lot of bird books, obviously. So why did you decide to create a new guide?
Well, funnily enough, it's a while back now, Larry. But even as a kid, I used to look at books, and I'd look at all the books, and frankly, I was never totally happy with the books I was getting, for one simple fact, is that they're not lifelike. Yeah. You know, if we look outside, what do we see? We see everything that appears in focus from near to far and everything in between. And yet we look at a book and we see, as a rule, a white page with this bird that's up really close and in all this detail that's really not doing anything. And so what I wanted to do was to create an image that that is lifelike from near to far. And so that's what I did with the help of modern technology. You know, digital photography and Photoshop has made this possible now, whereas just 10 years ago it wasn't.
And the photographs, of which, what do you have, something like 10,000 in this book?
Well, we lost count at 10,000.
Oh, my goodness.
It's over 10,000. So, yeah, it's up there.
And I love the fact that the birds are in their natural setting.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you see them from different distances.
Yep.
I'm trying to imagine how you got the photographs and the number of photographs, and of course you can fool around a little bit with digital on distances, I suppose, but how you got those photographs.
I guess I've dedicated a number of years to doing it. Funnily enough, I'm really not a photographer. I'm a birder. I got involved in another book, and we couldn't get the photographs I wanted, so I ended up buying a big fancy camera lens, and from there I've really fallen in love with photography, but particularly in book design, and how we can change it to be more educational. You know, and I think if we look at the way we teach kids at school, or even adults as well, you know, we start by doing easy equations. We start with close-up things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with this book, basically I've done that. I've shown the images up close and personal because, you know, we all love the detail. But it becomes more lifelike, making those distant images so that your eye, you know, go through those scenes, hopefully, and, you know, you can start engaging yourself and trying to work out the answers yourself. What age is it? What sex it is?
Yeah.
Is it? And you see things that are consistent. So, you know, I think, hopefully, Larry, when you look through the plates, you'll notice that some things always stay the same. The shape of the birds, even though they might be in different poses, always stay the same. You know, the sizes are mm-hmm. consistent. And even the patterns of color stay consistent, usually only one or two patterns of color. And so in many ways, I'm trying to simplify birding, not make it more complicated like it might seem that at first, because there's so many images. But, you know, practice makes perfect. So, you know, the feedback is from a lot of beginners that they're really starting to see birding. Well, they relate to it more now than in the past.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. And I'm so glad to have my hands on a copy of your book. We happen to live on a lake, and the ice will soon be going out. And when the ice goes out, the ducks start coming in. And I'm telling you, the number of species of ducks that fly through Wisconsin, some to stay here, but a lot more to fly into Canada and on into the Arctic even, or at least far north of Canada. I can't always identify. I can identify quite a few of them, but I'm looking forward to having this guide.
Good. I'm looking forward to hearing back from you in a few months to tell me if it works.
Well, I think it's going to work, that's for sure. Our guest today, Richard Crossley, who is the author and producer of the Crossley ID Guide. It's published by Princeton University Press. And by the way, if you'd like to take a look, just go to my Facebook page, The Larry Mealer Show, and we've got some plates, some photos from Richard that we've put up, and also more information on the book itself. And please go ahead and do that. Just go to The Larry Mealer Show. And if you have a question for us, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Josh in Mineral Point has a question for you, Richard. So let's go to Josh. Hi, Josh.
Hey. I was just curious if the birds are theropods, and does that mean that they are dinosaurs?
Ah.
I wish that's a tough first question. And to be honest, Josh, I don't have the answer to that. That's not really what the book's about.
That's a tough one. And you're right. It's not really in a ways about what the book's about. So, Josh, I'm afraid we're going to have to let that one go, but thanks very much for calling. If you have a question, again, and you may have a question about a bird, maybe one that you've seen that you'd like to identify, maybe you have a question about birding itself, what are the optics that could be used? Richard, can you talk about optics at all?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different types of optics. I use some Nikon 7x42s. One of the big questions is, what is the best magnification? You know, and people often go for 10 times magnification. And that, back in the good old days, that seemed to be the favored magnification, because people perceive, because they see it up closer and in more detail, you know, it's going to help them more. I actually find it the opposite. I find that with the 7x, I see more clarity, more definition. I also have a bigger field of view, so it's a wider screen, so to speak, and also more depth of field. So, you know, more of the image from front to back is in focus. And I just find that so much better than the higher magnification. So,
yeah.
so that's what I use.
And it's probably a little less wobble, too. At least it is for me when I'm looking at that, a little less magnification.
That depends if I've had a couple of beers the night before.
Right? Yeah, well, you're right about that. Oh, my goodness. Well, you said that digital photography, I mean, has really made this the type of book possible. How is that?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's You know, I was very lucky. I started shooting film, and digital photography was just coming about when I started. And I switched over to digital, as I say, after a few months, and right from the get-go. It was just brilliant. You bring your images home. You can look at them on the screen. You can see whether you're taking them right or wrong. You can take a million shots, so it's very forgiving. But it's just so strikingly visual. And I think, you know, today so many bird watchers are sort of really hybrids like me. They're part bird watchers and part photographers. It's intoxicating. And as every day goes by, cameras are becoming cheaper and doing so much more. So it's becoming more accessible. And I think from a conservation standpoint, it's helping as well because, you know, people love to look at beautiful scenes and beautiful birds. So the more people show these things, such as in this book, I think the more people will jump on board this great sport, and the conservation impacts will be better. You know,
yeah, I would think so. What camera do you use, by the way, normally?
I use Nikon equipment mostly. I usually use a 500 millimeter lens for taking the birds. So it's done a real good job on messing up my back because I always hand hold it. Because for me, it's like, I guess it's just like shooting. Maybe a lot of the folks in your neck of the woods, you know, they're used to carrying big guns around. And, you know, camera's just the same. For me, it's all about speed. You know, birds, I take lots and lots of flight shots, which are the greatest challenge in photography.
Yeah.
And so I like the maneuverability. But, yeah, I have lots of smaller lenses. But, yeah, I use mostly Nikon. Usually I have like three or four different cameras at a time, so that's why if you see me on my knees walking, that's why. You know.
Richard Crossley, our guest today, we're talking with him about birds. He is the author of the Crossley ID Guide to Eastern Birds, including the birds we find right here in Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking birds today with our guest Richard Crossley, internationally acclaimed birder and photographer. His book, The Crossley ID Guide, Eastern Birds. Great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. Pat in Rudolph, Wisconsin. Let's go to you now. Thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. I've got to get that book. Every book has something else that I need. My question is that I'm looking out my window now at more than a dozen cardinals. Half of them are bright red, and the woodpeckers and everything else. But recently we have seen a small hawk attacking all of the birds flocking to our feeders, and I'm wondering what kind of hawk that is.
Well, there's a number of hawks that it could be.
Because we've seen him right next to the window.
Sharp chin, maybe?
Well, it could be a number of things. Actually, in recent times, it seems like some of the hawks have really adapted to bird feeders because it's just like breakfast or dinner on a plate there, you know. So things like Cooper's hawks, which are a medium-sized hawk with quite a long tail, they come in a couple of different color patterns. The young ones have dark, blotchy streaks underneath, and the adults have a bit more of a cap and rufous underneath. They'll take up residence at feeders, and, you know, they'll come in there a couple of times a day and snag lunch. So it could be that. But, you know, a lot of raptors have actually adapted both to feeders but also to man-made environments, city centers and things, because there's a plenty of food. And just they've almost needed to do that to acclimatize to the environment as it changes. So, you know, a lot of raptor numbers have gone up drastically in the last few years because they've been able to adapt to some of the things that we've done.
Yeah, it's interesting. Thanks, Pat, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Yeah, we have a broad-winged hawk that sits on our boat hoist, comes in and takes an occasional chickadee or what have you, and... You know, I guess that's just part of nature.
Yeah, it is that.
Will and Toma, we go to you next. Hi, Will. Thank you for calling.
Morning, guys. Not really a question about birds so much as like habitat for the birds. I have about an acre and a half of land that right now has just got a couple of pine trees and maple on it, but my wife wants to build a bird sanctuary, so I kind of wondered what sort of flowers and trees might be best for attracting the birds to come live there.
You know, okay, great question, Will. I mean, I think typically anything that's native rather than introduced plants or trees always works better. Things such as wild cherries are always great, fruiting trees. And things, you know, on the ground, crops such as millet and maize always attract lots and lots of birds. There are lots of books written about it, but the key is typically to just stick with native plants.
You know, there's one good, Will, you might go online to the UW Extension Learning Store. It's called the Learning Store. And there in the Learning Store, it has a list of all the publications that Extension produces. And one of the publications is titled Landscape Plants That Attract Birds.
Okay.
And it's, you know, and it's written for Wisconsin. And so I think, you know, along with Richard's advice, he gave some good advice. And I think that book or that publication will tell you about the plants that will work well in your area and the things that you can do to attract birds.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's my to-do list for the whole summer.
All right. There you go. Well, you may be tuning in as we talk about landscaping and other things then over the course of the summer. So stay listening, Will. Joe in La Crosse, let's go to you next. Hi, Joe.
Did you say hi, Joe?
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't catch that. Hey, I have a bird ID question. I'm from Wisconsin, so I'm used to the native birds here, but I was in Atlanta not too long ago, and kind of foraging on the ground was a black shiny bird about the size of a crow, maybe a little bit smaller, but it had this big, bright orange, like feathered boa around his neck. And I was curious if you had any idea on that bird.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Well, there's a couple of, you know, sometimes you get what we call aberrant birds that have odd things, odd coloration. But this may be, there's a couple of minors, the type of starlings that come from like the India area, in Southeast Asia. There are a couple of introduced species that are occasionally seen in this country as escapes. It could be something like that. Hill miner is the one that actually comes to mind. Other than that, I'm not really sure.
Hill miner, possibly, though. Okay, there you go. Thanks, Joe, for calling. Appreciate your call. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson joining us again. And we're here to ask you to invest 3 minutes of time in your own future. Our goal is to ensure that all of the programs you value, including this one, are here on Wisconsin Public Radio when you want them. So a contribution of any amount will do just that. I hope you'll make your gift now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. Judith, we've got some news in terms of pledges.
We do. We're looking to get 48 more pledges in the next 59 minutes. We've already had 12 pledges, so thank you so much for that. Your pledge right now helps keep this program going strong. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Richard Crossley's a great guest, and you hear great guests all day long on the Ideas Network. This is really, I think, a unique radio service in the nation, and your support makes it possible. So I hope you'll pledge now for this station, the one you rely on and enjoy. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can receive a copy of the Crossley ID Guide Eastern Birds as a thank you gift for your pledge of $200. Your pledge will help support the programs and you'll enjoy this item. Again, that's a copy of the Crossley ID Guide Eastern Birds for your pledge of $200. Your pledge of any amount supports WPR programs and is appreciated. You can do that at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
We really are listener supported here at WPR. More than a third of our budget comes from your contribution, so we're coming to you today to ask for your financial support of these programs you love and rely on every day.
Make your pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. A contribution of any amount makes you a member of WPR. Take a moment to think about what Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you.
What is it worth to you? Well, let's see. It's worth a lot to me, I can tell you that. I hope it's worth a lot to you as well. Think about that, then make your pledge of support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
The easiest way to make sure that your support for WPR is always current is to become a sustaining member. Being a sustainer means that your gift, whether it's $5 a month, $100 a month, or anything in between, automatically renews every year.
You know, I don't do that. I probably should. I usually write one check a year. But I tell you what, if you're a sustainer, you have no more renewal notices in the mail. That helps Wisconsin Public Radio save money because it makes your contribution go further. I hope you'll make that switch and make a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Being a sustainer it's such a great thing to do. That, you know, we'll say thank you by planting a tree, as a matter of fact, in the Shawamigan National Forest on your behalf when you become a sustaining member.
Larry, our goal for the program today is 60 pledges. We've already gotten 13, so that leaves 47 that we're looking for before 12:30. Please give now. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose food for 40 as your thank you gift. This thank you gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger and in your area. So pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Elizabeth from Green Bay says, WPR is my primary source for news and information about everything. And Elia from Madison says, I trust the news, scientific, artistic, and cultural programs that WPR presents. We hope you do too. Donate now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And thank you.
Thanks to everybody who contributed so far. Appreciate it very much. And if you haven't, do it right now while you're listening as we talk with Richard Crossley here. Great to have him along. He is the author, producer, he's the writer and the photographer. He's done everything for the Crossley ID Guide to Eastern Birds. A fantastic book. I'm telling you, I am not letting go of this book. I've got my hands on it and I'm keeping my hands on it. There are somewhere over 10,000 photographs in this book, if you can believe. It's over 500 pages, along with some wonderful writing as well. And it's a treat for me to have him with us today to talk about the book and to talk about birds. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. An email from Christina, Richard, with all the cold and snowy weather, where do the birds sleep and how do they protect themselves from the elements? Is there something we can do to help them survive the winter?
Oh, great question. You know, obviously, as has already been mentioned before, any time we can supply food for them when it gets really cold and there's very little or no natural food, that's huge. You know, food, you know, helps us keep warm. So that's basically their power supply. But we can put other, you know, boxes out and things like that so a lot of birds that will actually typically roost or sleep in the open will actually go to more sheltered areas to get out of the wind, so to speak, where it's a little bit warmer if they can. If you really want to take it to the extreme, you know, some people will actually put heaters out, you know, just like a lamp or something like that. Obviously, you really get terrifically cold weather out there in winter, so that can help as well. The other thing is just shrubbery, that dense shrubs that are in also in protected areas, maybe near your house where it's out of the wind a little bit. Obviously, some birds won't go into boxes or things like that, but they will roost in shrubs or trees. So the more protected that vegetation is, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Gail in Fish Creek, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Gail.
Hi. We have an odd situation. We've been trying to figure out what the issue is. We have had, since we built our house, we have a tall chimney, and it's got a flat slab on the top, probably looking perfect for a nesting area. We kept having a pair of hawks coming by, and any time they did, we also have been befriended by a raven who, he's just huge, and he hangs around the house, and he brings us gifts and things and sits on our railings and squawks and swoops around the house. And he has an issue, a major issue, conniption fit, when these hawks show up. So far they haven't nested anywhere in the area, but they do come and hang out. But what it seems like, whenever they're here, this raven just has an issue. And I'm wondering what the issue is between the ravens and the hawks. These are red-tailed hawks.
Okay.
Well, if you thought something was going to come and eat you, would you have an issue? I mean, that's the thing, you know. A lot of hawks eat birds. And sometimes the parent might not be worried, but also they have, you know, they have eggs, chicks, and they're definitely fair game. I mean, most birds perceive raptors and owls as well as a problem because, you know, they want to stick around to see the end of the day.
Yeah. That's...
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. How about Roger in Prentice? Hi, Roger.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Hey, I saw a bird. It was on the ground. It moved on the ground on my property here in Prentice last summer. And the best way I can describe it, it was almost as tall as a turkey, but with a shorter neck. It was kind of a tannish gray. Almost had the texture of like in the feather texture like a pigeon. And I have absolutely no idea what that bird was.
Are you near water, by any chance?
I have a creek running through my property.
Okay.
And there is a pond about 2 miles from my house.
Okay. Richard, what do you think?
Got me there. What shape was it?
Kind of shaped like a Cornish hen, but with a really long neck.
Well, could it have been a pheasant?
No, definitely wasn't a pheasant. Now, it didn't have the colors of a pheasant. It was probably in the body. The circumference was probably 2 times the diameter of a pheasant.
Right. You know, to be honest, descriptions are tough. You know, I think at this point it's, you know, I look at birds not as color. I look at them as a size. And a shape and behavior, you know, where they live. And so, you know, you gave me the size, the shape I sort of got a little bit, but then how it's behaving is such a clue. Is it sort of skulking along, you know, or is it sort of standing upright like a heron?
It was standing upright, moved like a turkey.
Standing upright. Larry, what do you think it is?
Well, it's a good question. It could have been a crane of some sort. Or
I have cranes on the property, and I know what they look like.
So this is smaller than the crane?
Smaller than a crane, yeah.
Huh.
Now, I'll tell you, some of the guys that work...
Maybe a heron.
Well, no, I know what a heron is, too. The guys at work thought it was... What do they call this chicken? Prairie chicken or something like that?
Oh.
Yeah. It could
That'd be an awfully big one.
Greater prairie chicken or something. Yeah, sharp-tailed grouse, perhaps. Something like... But this comes back to the, you know, did it look like a pheasant-type bird? Was it from that family?
No, it looked more like... and I'm trying to remember, you know, in terms of its shape, geez.
You know what? Next time you're going to have to take a photograph. You see?
I sit in my breakfast nook and look out over my property all the time because we have sandhill cranes that nest here.
Oh,
so they're kind of curious in the summer. And I just happened to be sitting here, and it just walked right across the pasture, kind of like a chicken or a turkey.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't moving fast. It was kind of browsing, and you know, it probably stood. Oh, a good 14 inches tall.
Well, you know, if it looks like a chicken and it acts like a chicken, it's probably going to be some type of chicken. So, you know, there's a few different types, you know, greater prairie chicken. You know, sometimes these, you know, pheasants are bred in captivity and they have all sorts of colors to them. So it can be an escape like that. And sometimes, you know, it's just not easy to identify things without good views. So.
Yeah, without good views. And that's one of the things you provide in your book. Man, talk about the number of views. Roger, that'd be something to take a look at. Take a look through Richard's book and see if you can come up with a bird. You know, it might be a prairie chicken of some sort. It could be. Probably more likely a grouse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more likely a grouse. Thanks for calling. Lynn in Evansville, let's go to you. Hi, Lynn.
Hello, and thank you for Larry and Richard for taking my call.
Sure.
Say, in late November, I was driving on Route 14 from Janesville to Darien and came across, to me, an absolutely amazing event in which I saw hundreds of birds that totally filled the sky from the horizon line to my presence. These were birds that were whitish gray in appearance that looked somewhat like albatross in that they had relatively wide wingspans in terms of their body size and kind of angled wings.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think that albatross flock or migrate. So I was wondering, do you have any idea of what I saw?
I think these would probably be Franklin's gulls. They're a type of gull, and they breed in the Midwest, and then in late fall, they often pack up into huge flocks. And so if you know, if they're relatively white underneath and they're actually gray above, they have dark hoods as a rule. And they'll get in flocks of multiple thousands.
Yes, yes. It was jaw-dropping. Could you repeat the name of them again, please?
Yeah, Franklin's, F-R, as in the president, Roosevelt.
Gotcha.
Franklin's gull.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. That would be my guess, too. I think you nailed that one, Richard. Tom,
one for ten.
No, you're doing a great job here. I tell you what, Richard Crossley is our guest today. He is the author and producer and photographer for the Crossley ID Guide for Eastern Birds. That includes Wisconsin birds. And great to have him with us today. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Give us a call or email at talk@WPR.org. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Net. The person who just called, Roger and Prentice, someone else called in to say, or emailed in to say, it might have been a guinea fowl, and we do have guinea fowl. They're typically you know, raised, and people will have a few of them on their farm because they, you know, they eat a lot of bugs, and so it might have been a guinea fowl, and I think that's probably a good guess as well. Hard to know without more detail on what the thing looked like. Camille in Frankfort, Michigan, we're on to you now. Hi, Camille.
Hi. I have had a feeding station set up, and I have to refill all the containers of the feeders about every 3 days. There are lots and lots of birds, different kinds, but I'm thinking of going out of town for a bit. Now, how dependent are they on in northern?
On what you're providing, yeah.
And I have another question about doves, too.
Okay, Richard?
Good question, Camille. They do become quite dependent. It depends really on how much snow is around. Again, if everywhere is totally snow-covered, then it becomes very, very difficult for them to feed, particularly if that snow is frozen snow. So, you know, they do become somewhat dependent. But, however, have a good trip. They'll find some other feeders or somewhere else they can feed. But, you know, funnily enough, there haven't been many studies on this and just how dependent birds become. If I was 21, maybe I'd do a thesis on it or something. But, you know, I think they're fine. Birds do very good at adapting and finding new food sources. And the only when it becomes really serious is when you have a lot of, it's constantly below freezing, and there really aren't other food sources, then it becomes more of a problem.
Mm-hmm. You had another question about doves?
Yes. What is it about the dove wings that, I assume it's something about the wings, with every beat of their wings, every little tiny flight, there is this sound, a squeaking sound. What is that?
I don't know how scientifically they make that noise. It's, you know, usually people describe it as whirring their wings. I'm more familiar with owls, actually, where they have actually serrated feathers that actually stop the sound, so that it enables the wind to go through the feathers, so it makes no sound at all, so the mice and things don't hear the birds coming. So usually it's to do with the actual shape of the outer primaries, and that shape, you know, makes different sounds. You know, a lot of birds, such as mute swans, you know, make a lot of sound when they're flying, and it's just basically the how the wings or the feathers go through the air.
Yeah.
Does it serve them in some way?
I'm sorry?
Does it serve them in some way? It serves the owls, but I don't know about the doves.
It certainly serves the owls, obviously, for being quiet, but no, I don't think it serves the owls. Maybe it's something to do, I don't think anybody knows this, but maybe there is something we don't know. Maybe it's something to do with attracting mates or something, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I've never heard of anybody coming up with a reason for it.
No. Camille, thanks.
Thank you.
Great question. Great question.
Molly in Duluth, Minnesota, we're on to you now. Hi, Molly.
Hi. I just wanted to say, Richard, I got your book right away, and it is wonderful. I've paged through it, and it's fun trying to find all the mini birds that are on each page. So just wanted to say thanks for a great new guide.
Well, thank you very much, Molly. It's always great to hear that. But I have a question for you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Do you think you've found every bird in there?
No way. It's amazing.
The funny thing is, you know, I did the blooming book, and I can't remember where all the birds are. I mean, that's serious. I'm sure I put something in here. And I was just out for a drink a couple of nights with another guy, and he says, you know what? My favorite shot is the worm-eating warblers. You can just see the head. And it's like, you know what? I was looking at that page the other day. I'm like, where was it? He goes, oh, it's top right. So I actually had to go back after a couple of pints and see where it was. You know?
Oh, that's a great story. Thanks, Molly, for calling. Appreciate your call as well. Richard Crossley, our guest today, the author of the Crossley ID Guide. And you just heard from someone who received that book, who purchased the book and loves the book. You may love it as well if you get a chance to get it. What's this program worth to you? What's the program? This program, maybe Zorba Pasture on Your Health or Joy Cardine's program. What are they worth to you? Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears Poisson joining us. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive, where we ask you to place a value on all of the WPR listening you do throughout the year and then make a financial contribution in return. I hope you'll make your gift of any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. How are we doing here, Judith?
Larry, we're doing well. We've gotten 22 pledges so far, and half of those are from first-time pledgers, which is really
That's
exciting.
Great.
Thank you so much. But that means that we're still looking for 38 pledges in the next 40 minutes, just about one a minute. So thanks if you've already given, but if not, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR has high standards. We know you're intelligent, and because of that, we try to aim high. Because you appreciate the intelligent conversations that you do get from the Ideas Network, make a pledge in support of the Ideas Network at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on WPR. Consider asking for a copy of the Crossley ID Guide Eastern Birds that we've been talking about as your thank you gift when you give $200 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Many listeners tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio all day long.
8 hours. From the time I get to work in the morning till the time I go home at night in the car on the way home for lunch and on the way home after work till 5 o'clock at night. Every day, Monday through Friday.
You can count on our being there for you. Can we count on you for a pledge of financial support today? Call now. Here's the number.
That number is 1-888-202-2552. That's 888-202-2552. I hope you'll call in now with your pledge of support. Listener support is such a big part of why this program is available to you right now. So make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We ask that you make a contribution, and we also ask that you give an amount that's comfortable for you. Some give $60 a year. Some give $100,000.
Well, that'd be a good one.
$1,000 or more.
Oh, man. Well, whether it's $100,000 or $1,000 or maybe $200, we'll send you a copy of the Crossley ID Guide. Whatever the amount, we use it to support our programs. And in turn, you stay informed and entertained, I hope. So give now whatever the amount is comfortable for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
WPR exists because people contribute. When we all give, our contributions add up to make this program possible. Your contribution really does make a difference.
So, what are you doing right now? A good thing to do would be to give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. It's as simple as that. One pledge at a time. You make this station possible.
We hope you'll make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, now, Judith was being optimistic and suggesting $100,000, but maybe you could make a $1,000 contribution. You could consider that. Your $1,000 contribution will play a major role in supporting this station and, of course, and make it available to everyone who wants to listen. And of course, we'd send you a copy of the Crossley ID Guide.
You could pay your pledge in monthly installments of about $83 a month by check, by credit card, or even better, right from your bank account. Your pledge in any amount is appreciated, and we'll help you set it up at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you listen to WPR, you're not alone. Sure, you might be alone in your car, or maybe you're in the home or in your office. But in truth, you're sharing this experience with us and with many other listeners.
We're all in this together. We have a lot in common. We share values that bind us together. Your support is a big part of what makes this program possible for you, for the community you share it with. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this hour alone, you can receive the Crossley ID Guide Eastern Birds when you make a contribution at the $200 level or higher. Your donation supports the programs you love. You can also get this nice thank you gift with your pledge of $200. When you make that contribution, be sure to mention, oh, I would like the Crossley ID Guide. Pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Ways to go yet.
Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is a choice, not a requirement. WPR is a resource you share with other listeners, and when you contribute, you share the cost of keeping this station on the air. That way, no one has to pay more than they can afford.
Yeah, and you know, you might not be able to give right now, and certainly we understand that. But if you can afford a gift, no matter what amount, it's going to make a big difference to you and to your community at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
A gift to WPR is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio to the community. You enjoy this radio station, and so do many others who can't afford to support it right now.
So make your pledge right now for yourself, your community at WPR.org, or at 888-202-2552. Judith, are we moving at all here?
We're moving a little bit. We have 25 pledges in. That means that we're looking for 35 more before the 12:30 break. So you can help us get to that goal by going to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Ask for a copy of the Crossley ID Guide, Eastern Birds, with your pledge of $200 or more. Whatever you do, just pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Leslie from New Berlin did say, "With WPR is my source for interesting, educational, and informative programs. I learned so much about so many different types of topics on shows like this one. It's eminently worthy of my financial support." Leslie, thank you. Leslie from New Berlin had that comment. Stephanie from Madison says, "I know that I need to be better informed now more than ever before. Wisconsin Public Radio helps keep me informed. And without it, it'd be a serious struggle." And for programs like this today, with when we're interviewing someone like Richard Crossley, who knows so much, he's an internationally acclaimed birder and photographer. How many times do you have the opportunity to talk to someone like this about birds and birding? He's really a great guy. I can tell that from how he talks and answers questions and makes comments. He's a wonderful guy. He's put together a wonderful book, The Crossley ID Guide, and I'm hanging on to my copy. It's a book that you're really going to enjoy as well. 2,000 photos. Really, 10,000, more than 10,000 photographs of birds. The same bird taken from many different angles and distances. It's a wonderful book. And you can have a copy. Donate now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And we'll be back with Richard Crossley right after a quick look at the news. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest by phone, Richard Crossley, internationally acclaimed birder and photographer who has a great new guide out, birding guide. It's called the Crossley ID Guide, Eastern Birds. And of course, it includes our Wisconsin birds. So great to have him along. And certainly, if you'd like to join in with your own questions, I hope you do. Lines are filled right now. Let's go to Mary in Loganville, I believe. Am I get that right? Mary, are you there?
Oh, is it Marie?
Oh, Marie. Sorry. Yeah. Marie in Lugerville. Wow.
Lugerville. Up in Price County.
All right.
I called because of the man that called from Prentice and was trying to figure out what bird he had.
Yep.
And there are wild turkeys that are very light phase. And I even saw one just to the north on the other side of Highway 8. Beautiful birds roaming with a pack of wild turkeys. But the coloration was just tannish to white. It's the second time I've seen a bird with that kind of color phase. And it's very possible it still could have been a wild turkey, just in a different color phase.
Yeah, and maybe a smaller one. Yeah, what do you think, Richard? I think that's a good guess, too.
Yeah, and then we have a lot of places around that do raise birds. So, smaller, I mean, guinea hen is smaller, chucker or quail. You will see those birds around on the side of the road.
Yeah.
So, but I kind of leading towards the wild turkey in a different phase.
A different color phase.
Yeah, and then could I give a shout out for, because he said he has cranes. Our crane count is coming up April 16th.
That's right.
Yeah.
And actually, there's information. If you go to the Crane Foundation or the Crane Foundation would have information on the crane count.
It'll have everything is on there. It's coming up. The coordinators will be listed on the site. Anybody needs any information, it's all be there.
All right. Thanks a lot, Marie. And that's the International Crane Foundation. If you put that in the search engine, you're going to get it.
Yes.
Thanks, Marie. Bob in Shell Lake, we turn to you next. Bob, hello.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I've called before about blue martens, and I wonder, or purple martens.
Purple martens, yeah.
Exactly. And they seem to be in a decline in northern Wisconsin, and I was curious if your guest had any idea as to what's causing that or what anyone can do to try to alter that?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Declines of purple martins have declined in some areas, like a lot of birds. A lot of species actually in Europe as well have declined, and some have actually increased. So it's six of one and half dozen of the other. The reason for decline in purple martins is, again, we're still trying to work it out. They feed on insects as a rule, so it might be something to do with that. You can certainly, they love nest boxes, purple martin nest boxes, and if you put a few up and you put them upright, there's a very good chance that you will attract them. Though I don't think that people really think it's lack of nesting habitat that is a reason for decline in some areas.
No, but there has been a decline. Actually, it gives me an excuse to mention another Extension publication. Shelves, Birdhouses, and Feeders is another one of the Extension publications put out by UW Extension. If you are interested in making a birdhouse or a feeder, a good place to go would be to the UW Extension Learning Store. And you can view it right online, the information right online. Thanks, Bob, for calling. Harold in Manitowoc, we're on to you now. Hi, Harold.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a little bird story. A couple of summers ago, down in rural Rock County near Beloit, my mother discovered a Central American hummingbird in her yard. And, well, the word got out, and there were birders from all over the country lined up down her gravel road with their cameras out to look at it. If I remember right, I think it was a green mango.
Green-breasted mango.
Yes, and they rarely make it above the Rio Grande. And here it was in Wisconsin. And all summer long, the birders came. I guess they had to check it off their list. And it was just a wonderful experience for my mom, who's been a lifetime birder, and she was very excited about it.
Oh, and good for her for letting others know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they were just surrounding the house with the telephoto lenses and very, very genteel people. It was just a wonderful experience.
Oh, it's a great story. Richard, comment?
I'm sorry, Larry?
I said, do you have a comment on that? I mean, it's the kind of thing that happens from time to time.
Yeah, I can comment on that. Send it to my bloody garden. I am curious. How many people does she think came to the house to see it?
She put out a log book, and there were hundreds.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, you didn't sign your name and where you're from, and I remember going for a visit, and there were cars out this rural lane 30 or 40 at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. I know in England a number of years ago they had the first record for Europe of golden-winged warbler, and it turned up on a supermarket car park, and they reckon, I think they had 7,000 visitors in the first 4 days.
Well, I can't say as that many went to see my mom's hummingbird, but it was a great experience, and the bird ended up in, I believe, in Chicago at a zoo, and I can't think of the name of it right now.
Oh, you're kidding.
It would not have survived the winter, and they did capture it and take it down to the zoo in the aviary down there. So it's just a wonderful experience and kind and gentle people.
Yeah.
There was a call earlier on about what you can do in the winter to keep birds warm and provide habitat. There are a lot of cases where these southern, in New Jersey, we often get hummingbirds that typically breed in California and on the West Coast and winter way further south in warmer climates. But occasionally try to winter up here. They get blown off course. Or maybe they're even trying to extend their wintering range further north, global warming and all. But people will often put out, you know, when they've got them coming to the garden, they will often put out heaters. And this is one species, one type of bird that will actually use these heaters. And so the birds will roost on little branches near these heaters or lamps through the winter. And there's one remarkable story of, I think it was a rufous hummingbird, that is typically on the West Coast, went to the same house like 3 years running. And they would actually leave. It would actually leave around late January, which is it's still almost midwinter.
Yeah.
But these hummingbirds, they actually leave very very early in the winter. They don't stay there till like March or April, like a lot of wintering birds do. So it's fascinating. You know, and some of the preconceived ideas of what we have get changed when we get these birds out of range and we really watch them and follow them, that the patterns of their life are a little different to what we sometimes, you know.
Might suspect.
In retrospect.
Harold, thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Great show.
All right, appreciate it. Rusty in Springstead, we're on to you. Hi, Rusty.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a question and a little story to tell you. There's a bird that I just totally fell in love with 20-plus years ago. I do a lot of wilderness tripping and camping up in Canada and northern Minnesota, and it's called a Canadian Jay. It's same size as a blue jay, a little chubbier. It's got a cute little head, and it's all gray. And the tamest thing I've ever seen in my life, you know, I was camping In the wilderness, you know, basically, and these birds, there might be a couple at first, so literally come down on top of your head, on your shirt sleeve, and kind of cock their head and say, "Hey, where's my food?" They love peanuts in the shell. We had a couple of them, and in a matter of a half hour, there was about 10, 15 of them begging for food. And these birds do not even hesitate. They just kind of basically plop on your lap looking for handouts, and it's such a fun experience. Every time I go up to Canada, I look forward to the experiencing, because every time I go up there, it seems like they're there every time, you know, in different places. And I know they're related to the crow family. What makes these birds so tame and so inquisitive to the humans like that?
Some species are just generally inclined to be tamer than others. In the case of grey jays, I mean, you can call them Canadian jays, but usually called grey jays. They're usually in real northern climates, very cold. So I guess it's a food thing. So humans, they, you know, like you said, they have a really friendly, soft demeanor. They're a bit like kids. And they're probably like kids as well. They probably realize if they go up to humans and they scream and make a bit of noise, we'll give them some food, you know? So...
And, you know, there are times, some years, when the mouse population or the rodent population in Canada takes a nosedive, we wind up with snowy owls in northern Wisconsin primarily. And and people are always amazed at how tame they seem. But, you know, they don't have a lot of human contact. They may not have a lot of human contact, so they just don't know any better or any different.
Yep. I think the other thing, it sometimes goes, I think that's a great point, Larry, and that's the truth. They're not scared of what they don't know about. But it also goes to the other end of the spectrum as well. If you go to places where there are lots and lots of people, birds get familiar with people often, and they become tamer with familiarity. And so actually a lot of reserves that are around cities, and particularly in Florida, it seems where there's thousands of people go there every day. Often the birds are so tame, you can almost hand feed those as well. Another northern bird, obviously, is black-capped chickadee. And there are lots of those will literally feed out of your hand. If you put if you put seed on your hand, once they get used to, sometimes they will come out and actually take the seed off the palm of your hand or off the top of your head.
Yeah, absolutely. We have Noel in Port Washington. I wonder if this is Noel Cutright. Noel?
Sure is, Larry.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, I just wanted to welcome Richard when he comes to Wisconsin here in a short time. Larry, you can bring your book over to Milwaukee and get it autographed and meet Richard on March the 7th at the Urban Ecology Center. My son got to meet Richard when he worked as a raptor counter down in Cape May, New Jersey, and he's going to be gone New York counting raptors, but I'm hoping to come down on March the 7th and meet Richard and get my book autographed.
That's looking forward to that now, very much so. Can't wait.
So that's March 7th at the Urban Ecology Center?
That's correct. That's on the east side of Milwaukee, just near the Milwaukee River on 1500 East Park Place. And there's information on the event on the urbanecologycenter.org website.
urbanecologycenter.org.
Right.
That website. Hey, Noel, thank you.
Look forward to it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And certainly appreciate having Richard Crossley with us. You know, Connie in Portage says she sees lots of purple martins. And I think, you know, there's a little bit of a situation where sometimes in one area the purple martins may go down and other areas they go up. And this could be true of other species as well, Richard.
Yes.
Yep, absolutely. Well, it's great to have Richard with us today. Richard Crossley, the Crossley ID Guide. It's published by, for Eastern Birds, it's published by Princeton University Press. And wonderful to have him with us here today on the Ideas Network and during this Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. We're here today to raise money, the money we need to pay for the programs that keep you in the know and entertained. That's how WPR works. The people who use it help pay for it. I hope you'll go now to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552 right now to ensure the future of the programs you count on. Again, that's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And Judith, back with us. Judith, we're doing pretty well.
We are. We're just looking for six more pledges in the next 10 minutes, Larry, and that's certainly doable. Pledges like all of yours out there listening keep us on track to support the programs you count on. Thanks if you've already given. If not, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying the conversation with Richard Crossley about birds. I certainly have. Isn't he a great guy? You know, he knows so much, and he is nationally, internationally known. And but, you know, he's the kind of guy you might go have a cup of coffee with or maybe a beer with. I hope you'll take a few minutes this hour and in the future, in the many hours to come, help make those hours possible here at Wisconsin Public Radio by putting a value on the programs you enjoy today. And then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If hearing about the Crossley ID Guide has gotten you itching to go out and look at birds, we can offer you the Crossley ID Guide, the Eastern Birds, as a thank you gift for your pledge of $200 or more. Your pledge will help support the programs, and you'll enjoy this item very much. Again, that's a copy of the Crossley ID Guide, Eastern Birds, for your pledge of $200. Your pledge of any amount supports WPR programs, so please do give us a call at 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org.
So, since I don't ever watch TV or read the newspaper, I'm always quoting, I heard it on WPR. I travel a lot and miss Wisconsin Public Radio when I'm out of town. I feel like Joy, Larry, Jean, Kathleen, Zorba are my good friends because I'm with them almost every day. I'm Barbara Gilmore from Grafton, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for all my news about our world.
And I'm Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson. We're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And, you know, maybe your gift is $50 or maybe it's $100 or maybe it's $500. Whatever the amount you choose is the right amount at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Giving couldn't be simpler, either at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We just need your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay for it.
Or you can, I tell you what, you can use your credit card. That's one way to do it, too. It saves both you and WPR time and the price of a stamp, or better yet, sign up for automatic sustaining donations from your bank account. Don't worry, we don't share your personal information with any other organizations. Best thing to do, give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. What do you listen to? What do you get out of the Ideas Network that you enjoy and value? Do you listen to Chapter a Day, Talk of the Nation, Car Talk, What Do You Know, Old Time Radio Drama? There's so many things to choose from and that you've probably come to rely on.
WPR gives you a window on the world like no other. Support this exciting mix of programs that you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of your pledge, and just know that every pledge is appreciated and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on WPR. Consider asking for a copy of the Crossley ID Guide, Eastern Birds, as your thank you gift when you give $200 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're thinking about your tax dollars, that your tax dollars to the federal government and the state already support WPR, you're certainly right about that. They do, and we thank you for that. Federal and state money combined provide more than a third of our budget.
But for you to get the quality and variety of programs you're used to on WPR, we also need contributions from individual listeners. These contributions make up another 40% of our budget, meaning we couldn't do this without you. Please make a personal contribution to pay for the radio programs you listen to on WPR. Just go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have a goal of 60 pledges during this time period, during this program. We're at 57 right now. I can't believe we're not going to make this. We'll make this with your support and with your help here. Your pledge right now helps keep this program going strong, puts us over the top here. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Not many radio stations can claim to educate, inspire, and engage, but we do. These values are at the core of Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR is a place to discuss and debate the issues, a place to examine the past and imagine the future.
You know, it's not something we do for you. It's something you do for yourself and for your community, because listener support is what makes this all possible. Contribute now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we kind of work on the honor system, don't we, Judith?
We do. And, you know, you don't have to pay for it, but think about what you would pay if you had to. Would you pay $5 a month or $10? What about $1 a day?
Decide the amount and then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your contribution will be used to support the programs you hear every day on this station, certainly including this one. I hope you'll contribute now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Larry, we are at 59 pledges. Our goal is 60. And this is my first opportunity to do Pledge Drive with you as your new producer. Yeah, I'm having a great time pledge pitching, having a great time working here, and having a great time getting to talk to the wonderful callers who call in with their wonderful questions. We hope that you'll call in now with your pledge of support. You can call 888-202-2552, or you can go online at WPR.org.
And when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose food for 40 as your thank you gift. This thank you gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. So please pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know, Larry, people can also consider becoming a sustaining member. It saves time and paper. You can set up ongoing monthly installments on your credit or debit card, or even better, right from your bank account. You don't have to remember to give. It just happens like magic. And even better, WPR will have a tree planted in Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest in northern Wisconsin on your behalf if you become a sustaining member. 1,000 people took us up on that offer last time.
And that is pretty cool. That's pretty cool. We have some comments. James from Heartland says, WPR reports the news, allows me to make my own interpretation. You don't make the news. And I also like your programming, your other programming. Karen from Genoa City says, WPR is the news source I count on and trust. It educates me. It plants seeds of creativity. It entertains. It provokes and touches so many parts of my life. I could not live richly without WPR. And even Connie from Eau Claire pledges and says listening to WPR is like going to university without having to choose a certain course at a time. What a wonderful way to get multiple degrees and enjoy it all the way. Tell you what, I feel like I've had an education in my years here. I hope you will feel the same way, and I hope you'll call in now with a contribution. You can reach us by calling 888-202-2552. 888-202-2552. Or better yet, go online to WPR.org. That's WPR.org. Thanks to Richard Crossley, to Judith, and thank you for listening here on the Ideas Network.